Greetings and welcome to the latest edition of the Entheogenic Evolution podcast. As always, I'm your host, Martin, and I'm happy to have you with me today. For this week's episode, I've got a nice long conversation with you with Edwin Jansen, and we cover a wide range of topics. Talk a little bit about the Enneagram, which is what Edwin likes to use to help people understand their personality and their hangups and their shadows. And we kind of put that in the context of 5-MeO-DMT experiences. And we talk about his own experience with microdosing 5-MeO-DMT using a new device called the M-Pen, and what he got out of that, and also how it was different when he went to Magda to go for a full release dose of 5-MeO-DMT. And so we just kind of talk all around about all of that kind of stuff. And we had about an hour and a half long conversation, so it's going to be a long one today. You might want to split it up into a couple different listens, but you know, that's totally up to you. Of course, before we get into this interview with Edwin, have a few announcements to make. First of all, just want to thank Michelle and Makidu, both of whom have upgraded their patronage over at my Patreon page up to the God Molecule level. Thank you both very much for that boost in support, and I look forward to having my complimentary 1 hour monthly consultations with both of you. Of course, Patreon is a great way to support me and the work that I do and also support the podcast. If you'd like to check it out, just stop by at patreon.com/martinwball or go to my main webpage, martinball.net. There's a link to Patreon at the top right of my page over there. There's everything from $1 a month up to $100 a month. There is no obligation. You can change it as you like. You can come and go as you please. And you get increasing access and benefits and gifts as you move up the scale. And as I always mention, at the $20 a month level and up, you get access to the archive of episodes of the Entheogenic Evolution podcast that are no longer active here on the main podcast channel. Also, thanks to Peter, who made a contribution via PayPal. Every once in a while, Peter stops by and does a little PayPal drop my way. Thank you very much, Peter. Really appreciate that. Of course, there is a link to PayPal at my personal webpage, martinball.net. So if you'd like to make a donation that way, very easy to do and always very much appreciated. On the announcements end, it is my birthday today that I'm recording this. This is Sunday, November 26th. I'm officially 51 years old today, and just receiving lots of birthday wishes on Facebook today. So thank you, everyone, who's wishing me a happy birthday. As I mentioned last week, I've got some music to give away here on my birthday, which I like to do. And actually, I checked my references from last year, and it turns out that I had made my album, The Pure Energy of Unconditional Love, available for my birthday giveaway last year, because I released it just like 2 weeks before my birthday. So I've continued to make that available for free at my Bandcamp page, which is martinball.bandcamp.com. And you can go over there and you can download that album for free. Just enter zero when you're asked for a payment. But since I made that one available last year, if there's anybody out there who got that one last year and is like, well, hey, I got this last year, what's Martin going to give me this year? Well, you can also grab my EP, When Nature Calls, which is also at my Bandcamp page. Just enter zero when prompted for payment. That's what I've set it to, is for free download. That's a 4-track album, but it's about 30 minutes long. It's got some really cool dub and all kinds of interesting sounds that I recorded out in the field. It actually has some whale songs that I recorded in Maui, a screech owl that I recorded in my backyard, some frogs and toads and insects that I recorded in Florida, and also some more frogs and crickets and rain that I recorded here in my backyard in Ashland. And it's all mixed in with the music there. So there's two albums that are available for free out there. If you'd like to grab them, just go to martinball.bandcamp.com. Also, I am just working on my schedule for consultations for the remainder of the year. I'm going to be taking off to do some traveling at the end of December, but I still have slots available in my schedule for 30, 60, or 90-minute integration calls. If you want more information about that, go to nondualentheogenicintegration.com. That's my main webpage for my integration services. or you can just shoot me an email at martinwball@gmail.com, and we can set up a time to talk. And I know with time zones, it's sometimes a little bit tricky, so I like to be flexible there to work with people on other sides of the world to find a time that works for you. But just shoot me an email. We'll set that up, and I'd be happy to speak with you and help you integrate your experience from a non-dual and energetic perspective. So we're just about ready to get into the interview with Edwin, but I do want to mention the website that he does bring up in the conversation about this M-Pen, which is a 5-MeO-DMT pen vaporizer. And that is, it's a Canadian company, a Canadian website, and it's mindfully.co. So it's mindfully.co. And if you're in Canada, you can get yourself an M-Pen. It's a very low dose. It's a microdose of 5-MeO-DMT. And we talk all about it here in this interview with Edwin. So without any further ado, let's go ahead and jump into it. And of course, next week, we will have another chapter from the audiobook to facilitating 5-MeO-DMT. And more interviews after that, of course. So just rolling along, we are almost done with the 15th year of the Entheogenic Evolution podcast. As soon as we hit January 1st, we'll be on to year 16 of this podcast. So the podcast is getting older just like I am. How about that? Funny how time works that way. All right. Thank you all very much for listening. Thank you all for supporting, those of you who do, through Patreon or through PayPal. And your support over the years has helped me keep this thing going to bring this content to you. All right, and I hope you had a good Thanksgiving holiday if you celebrate that. And here's our conversation with Edwin. Enjoy. All right, well, I want to welcome on to the Entheogenic Evolution podcast for today, Edwin Jansen, who is joining us from Toronto, Canada. Edwin, welcome to the podcast.
I'm so excited to be here. I've listened to many, 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 many episodes, and congratulations on doing this for over 15 years now. And I'm excited. I'm really excited to be here.
Well, thanks, Edwin. Do you ever go by Ed, or do you just use Edwin?
So when I went into high school, I thought I wanted to be cooler. And so I kind of told people to start calling me Ed. And then when I went to university, I thought now I want to be, you know, smarter. So I went back to Edwin. So people that know me from high school know me as Ed. Some people call me Eddie. I don't really care. It doesn't matter to me. I'll answer to all of it.
All right. Well, I'll just use Edwin for whatever reason. And who knows, maybe we can discuss this later. Maybe this is part of my personality type. I prefer using people's full names, or I should say the official name rather than nicknames. And I have never, ever in my life, except from my father when I was much younger, and I had one science teacher in junior high who was just a really great guy. He called me Marty, and my dad sometimes called me Marty. But other than that, if anybody ever calls me Marty, it's just like, nope, that's not my name. My name is Martin.
That's so interesting because, you know, you're referring to your Enneagram personality type. So you've done the Enneagram personality type, and we're going to be talking about that a bunch today. So you and I are the same Enneagram subtype. So we're both eights with the sexual instinct, or the one-to-one instinct. And interesting that eights are kind of all about control and all about kind of taking or having control, likely because we don't want other people to kind of control us, right? So interesting that you always prefer to call yourself by your full name and then therefore treat others the same. I'm opposite. I give everybody nicknames, whether they like it or not. Really? Yeah. And that's maybe my way of asserting control is by giving people ridiculous nicknames in many cases.
Well, it's funny that you say that because the only creature in the entire universe really that I use just an abundance of nicknames with is my dog Moxie. I've got a huge list of nicknames for her, but she's my little sweetheart. I mean, I love that darn dog so much.
That's a good name, by the way. Moxie is a great name for a dog.
Yeah, it works really well, and she's a super dog. Yeah, nicknames, control, personality types. We're going to be getting into all that. So we've kind of had a lot of things, a variety of different things to talk about today. And as you know, I always like to talk to people about, you know, their personal journey and personal experience. But kind of the overarching umbrella that I believe we've kind of congregated around for this interview is that you have been involved at various levels with the 5-MeO DMT community in Toronto. You're also kind of one of these advocates of low dose 5-MeO and meditation, and you have various experiences there. And then also you do consulting with people in Enneagram. And I think one of the things we first connected on was that you had heard the interview with Bernardo.
Yeah.
Which of course is not his real name, speaking of names. And he also does Enneagram consultations and had said that he used that actually to kind of help predict what kind of experiences or processes people might go through on 5-MeO. Mm-hmm. So that's where we originally connected. And so that's what brought up the Enneagram and all of that. So we're going to get into all of it. And I'm just rambling because, you know, we've got a broad smattering of things we're going to talk about today. But let's just start with you. Really anywhere you want, but kind of bringing us up into how you got involved in the 5-MeO DMT community and how your interest blossomed there and how you work with it today.
Yeah, awesome. Well, I'm ready to kind of tell my story, come out of the 5-MeO closet, I guess, so to speak, because it's been the greatest accelerant to my personal growth and my journey of vulnerability and knowing and loving myself by far of any of the tools that I've encountered in my life. And that's kind of what I'm feeling called to help other people to discover and kind of navigate. It's as you know, it's such a powerful tool. It's the world's most powerful tool, really.
Yeah.
And I've learned a lot about myself by using it. But maybe I'll just start by framing again. We talked about the Enneagram. The Enneagram has also been, it's been the most powerful non-psychedelic tool that I've used to learn and grow. And just like Bernardo was talking about on your podcast, I think one of the greatest benefits of the Enneagram is it ends up being a kind of a shortcut or kind of a map to understand both the deepest fears of our ego and the deepest motivations or hopes of our ego. And so what Bernardo was pointing out is in a 5-MeO full release, when the ego starts to reassemble itself, you actually have this beautiful vantage point where you can see the crazy of your ego as it's reinserting and reasserting itself there. So that's where I would, I guess, start my story, is that I am in Enneagram 8. Enneagram, so there's 9 types of the Enneagram, and there's 3 action types, 3 feeling types, 3 thinking types. The Enneagram 8 is an action type, and the Enneagram 8 is an external action type. So the Enneagram 8s, you and me are out there poking the world, basically, and then seeing how the world reacts. The Enneagram as a belief system also posits that each person's kind of combination of nature and nurture pushes them into having a favor for one type over the others. And so the origin story often for an Enneagram 8 is having to grow up too quickly or having to take on adult kind of tendencies or qualities, either to protect themselves or their family members, or to take action, sometimes taking care of parents, sometimes being in a particularly emotionally difficult situation where you have to assert some kind of strength at an early age. It's kind of like a lost childhood sort of experience for many Enneagram 8s. And I'd be curious whether you've had this experience yourself. So if I think about, you know, what my origin story is as an 8, I was actually born in the U.S. I was born in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Go Pack, go! And then my parents moved. My dad got a transfer and moved me to Canada, to Toronto area, when I was 9 years old. And in my early childhood, basically, I think I left the U.S. in grade 2. Then I was in Canada for grade 3, and then for various reasons, I either switched schools or had to change entire kind of classes something like 6 or 7 times in 9 years. So each, almost every year, I would have to go and make an entirely new friend group and figure out who was cool and how to get in there, and just constantly having to reinsert myself into some kind of social dynamics. And then also I've realized through doing some internal family systems therapy, some IFS therapy, that in particular where I live, there wasn't a lot of kids around. And so I would have to, at an early age, really go out of my way to organize like play dates with kids. And then almost every year, I'd have to try to make new friends. So in a way, like, this is kind of adult type behavior where you have to, you know, kind of sell yourself and go and make new friends. So I believe that's how I became an Enneagram 8. So action oriented, so out there, kind of trying to make friends and build relationships with people.
Yeah.
Anything in your backstory that tells you about how you might have become an 8, Martin?
Well, not really, based on the description that you just gave. You know, just reflecting back on my own childhood, that I've kind of always been very sort of fiercely independent in a way, and also just very self-directed and self-motivated. You know, going back into my earliest memories, I was the kind of kid who generally was pretty happy being by himself and doing his own thing. And like, if I look at my current life, I mean, I was laid off from Southern Oregon University a few years ago when things, the cutbacks from the coronavirus and all of that. And had, you know, so I did have to go somewhere for work. You know, I taught for, you know, maybe 10, 11 years at Southern Oregon University. But like, these days, like, everything that I do is either done like right here where I am right now, you know, following that fiercely independent streak, like writing my own books, doing my own podcast, making my own music. And then I go out, and often with my son, and I go out, take photographs, do stuff like that. And I really have kind of like a hermit sort of lifestyle, but it's kind of following that same thing. When I was a little kid, I would just spend hours and hours and hours and hours and hours playing with, I'll say it, Lego blocks. We didn't call it back that. Back then we just said Legos, but apparently that's incorrect. You got to say Lego blocks. So I played with Lego blocks, and I would make, you know, these vast cities or space stations, and I would just play for hours and totally content, you know, and I would do that by myself. And then I'd get out on my bike and I'd ride out to the local creek and I'd go looking for snakes and lizards for hours on end. And often, like, not even telling anybody where I was going. Like, my parents didn't necessarily know where I was. I was totally free range kid. And I had a sister that was a year older than me, but we didn't really get along too much. But, and then usually, as you know, in terms of companionship, I, throughout most of my life, I've been the kind of person that has maybe had one or two close friends, often just one at a time. So again, sort of that independent streak. But that's just going back in my memory. I don't feel that I was like, circumstances did not push me to grow up or take on adult responsibilities. I was just like the quiet kid who just knew what he wanted to do, mm-hmm. and knew himself well enough that I just did it. So I just was never really social. So that's just what comes up for me when I think of, like, quote unquote, my origin story at that level. And also something that I've shared here on the podcast and shared on my books, that also can really easily trace back sort of my commitment to this idea of very early on pondering, what is the nature of reality? Does God mm-hmm. exist? Are religions real, or is this all bullshit? And, you know, even as a little kid, this just really stands out in my memory, having watched Little House on the Prairie.
Mm-hmm, I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, you know, little Laura Ingler.
Half-pint Wilder. Half-pint, he called her, yeah.
And, you know, every night, you know, they would sit by their bedside and they'd, you know, pray to the Lord, right? And so I did that one night. I got down and I was, like, kneeling by my bed, and I put my head down and I had my hands up like that in the prayer position, and I just said, God, I just want you to know that I don't believe in you, and I'm not going to believe in you because
no offense.
I just don't buy it. Said, so if you are real, I just want you to know you're going to have to prove it to me because that's the only thing I'm going to accept. And, you know, then years and years later, seeing through my first full 5-MeO experience, this is what I was asking for. This is what set that condition that I set as probably like a 3 or 4 year old child.
Yeah. Like, so this is an Enneagram 8 story that you have that you're telling here.
Okay.
You're going out into the world and you are trusting yourself to make things happen. You're interested in making a difference, making an impact, but following your own inclinations. You're not following someone else's leadership. You're your own leader, right? Yeah. And then the process of integration, the Enneagram community uses the word integration to mean growth to higher levels of kind of comprehensiveness in how you are able to oscillate between different Enneagram types. And the opportunity for the Enneagram 8 is to release your own need to have your own power, to be in your own power and to be in control of yourself to a higher power. And you basically said to God, I won't release my power to you unless you are worthy of that, unless you show me that you are bigger, that you are true, that you are valid, right? And so you challenged God. And then 5-MeO shows up, you know, years later and says, oh yeah, here, this is it. This is a bigger power. And I had the same experience as you, where you just know a somatic felt sense that there is a greater power that that is there, that exists, right? So that's beautiful.
Yeah, so maybe we're jumping ahead a little bit because I still want to hear more of your story here, but it just raises the question then of this concept of surrender, which is so crucial to the 5-MeO experience. So like thinking back to my first full experience, that it was just this absolute surrender. Mm-hmm. And I think it was probably even in that very first experience where I had, you know, coming back from that, sort of this recognition of like, I've thought I've been relaxed before in my life, but I now realize that I've never actually been relaxed. And I think that this is something that's very true for a lot of people, that even though there's this sense of this infinite energetic expansion, so it's very, very empowering, it's very hypercharged, but within that is just, within the surrender is just, oh, I'm fucking letting go of everything. And like, I'm even letting go of my sense of the limits of my body. I'm letting go of the constructs of my mind, and that sense of surrender. And maybe this is where for a quote unquote controlling personality type can be so delicious, because maybe it's not often achieved, that just that sense of, oh my God, I can fucking let go of everything. And this is so relaxing yet so empowering at the same time. So just quickly, you know, when I read through my little Enneagram report, like one of the things it mentioned was you have trouble letting go. And so you micromanage. It's like, well, okay, that isn't like not me at all. Like I'm not a micromanager in any way, shape or form. So it was like, kind of my hackles raised. My little controlling hackles are like, don't fucking tell me I'm a micromanager. But so how does that play into this measurement of personality dynamics of control versus surrender, particularly when we're talking about the number 8? What is the number 8 called again?
Well, every different kind of Enneagram teacher might have different labels. The report that you took, the one that you took, which is called the Integrative Enneagram, they call it the Active Controller. Other Enneagram kind of people would call it the Challenger. Some people call it the Protector. So, you know, depending on, I guess, what view, the report that you did, and I think you mentioned this is kind of more of a professional in the work context, right?
Yeah.
And so something to realize about the Enneagram for the audience who's maybe not familiar with it is the Enneagram is very different from the Myers-Briggs or Hogan or any of these psychometrics tests. Enneagram wasn't created by a person. It was discovered many, many, many years ago and then built on top of by many different experts and authors. And there's a whole cottage industry of people building on top of it. So you took kind of one report and they use certain language, other people use other reports, other language, but we're all talking about the same general map. We're just trying to fill in the topography and the nuances of that map so that it can be helpful to people to whatever degree it is helpful. Mm-hmm. So if you read something and it says you're a micromanager, you're like, no, I'm not. Okay, that's not helpful. It's not true for you, right? But I have noticed, by the way, often the things that we feel like are not true for us, and like you said, you get your back up a little bit. When you kind of inspect that a little bit more and you say, what is that inside of me that's getting triggered by that? Because if it's completely off, it wouldn't, you know, probably be getting you upset. So there might be a gift in there for you. But anyway, to answer your question, what's the connection between surrender and control for the Enneagram 8? If you remember from Bernardo's podcast, he said that he noticed the way that he noticed that there was an Enneagram connection with 5-MeO facilitation was that he noticed that Enneagram 8s in particular were fighting the surrender more than any other type. Mm. And that's because the Enneagram 8 is the most dominating and control. We're control freaks, but essentially we want to have control because our deepest fear is that we will be harmed by others. So we take control so that other people don't have control over us. We trust ourselves and our own decision-making and our own ability to lead and get, you know, places. We don't necessarily trust people other than ourselves or people that we don't know well. And so, you know, you talked about that experience of surrender that you felt with your first, you know, full release. That was it for me as well. And the word that I use is it was a liberation. Mm-hmm. I was able to let go of a weight that I was carrying around without even knowing that I was carrying it around.
Right.
Right. And ultimately, it was the surrender of I don't need to own and you know, be Atlas and hold the world on my shoulders. I can surrender to this greater power, whatever the fuck it is, that has me within, you know, inside of it, right? Mm-hmm. And that ego that we have that believes that we need to be controlled, that believes that we could be hurt because we are separate from other beings, that just kind of falls away. And that's the beautiful moment. I would argue that maybe the Enneagram 8s have the most experience, the most liberation, because we're carrying around so much of that sense of responsibility and sense of control.
Yeah. Okay. So now here's another sidetrack, just because I'm curious, because we're talking about it. So I'm still interrupting your story. So going back to sort of the micromanaging thing, mm-hmm. One of the things that kind of popped up in my mind around that was music. So myself as a musician and as a multi-instrumentalist, you know, I'm really perfectly happy just to sit and make music with myself, you know, totally content, you know, and love just investing myself in that. And so I can see where that fits in, like the controlling, right? Because I get to play all the parts. I get to decide who gets, you know, how much air time within the song or whatever, and really enjoy that. And it's something that I don't do much of today, because I just live a real total hermit lifestyle currently. Mm-hmm. But back in the day, you know, I used to spend a lot of time playing music with other people, and I have played in a few ensembles and bands and stuff like that. And this is a place, and also I've had sort of quote unquote guest musicians with myself when I've been out performing. So the overall structure of the music has come from me, because, you know, I got my loop pedal and I'm laying it down and I have other musicians joining in. But something I've always been comfortable with, musically speaking, is if I'm joining someone else's group, that I'm just like, tell me what to do. What do you need? What would you like? How can I compliment? And then when I have other people play with me, I've always just been, do whatever you want. Just make sure it's in key, right? But you know, do whatever you want. So in other words, even though I do exert a lot of control over myself musically and the construction of music when I'm working independently, when I'm with other people, I'm just totally flexible and open.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's where I was like, well, no, I don't micromanage people in that sense. It's always like, bring whatever you've got and let's see what we can do. Yeah. So
I'm really glad that you brought this up because the Enneagram is the most incredibly nuanced and complicated, complex thing that you've ever found. The map is very detailed. Okay. And so we're going to get into trouble if we use any generalities or almost caricatures. Like you're so controlling. That doesn't mean you're controlling in every moment. The control really comes up or is most prevalent when you're afraid. So I like to think, and maybe one of the greatest lessons that I've learned in my life is that I believe that every intention, every thought, every action is generally coming from a place of love and abundance and positivity and connection and belief, and or it's coming from some place of lack or fear or doubt or scarcity, or you know, and so when we're in that space, that's when we can get micromanagey. That's when we can get protective or defensive or attacking. That's when the real Enneagram 8 kind of rears its head. And the Enneagram 8 is often, I think, the most misunderstood, but it's definitely the most villainized of the 9 Enneagram types because we scare the shit out of people when we are spouting our very strong opinions, when we're giving feedback, and you've been very outspoken about what you believe about 5MEO and everything like that. And you and I can have an argument or a discussion. We can disagree vehemently. And that's kind of fun for us because we're trading off in ideas and then people will be listening. They'll be like, wow, Martin and Edwin got into a whole fight and I was nervous and I felt experienced this conflict, but you and I are just, we're just jamming. We're just building on each other's ideas and making the thing better. Right.
Yeah.
And so I think that's one thing to keep in mind is that ultimately, am I coming from this place of love or am I coming from this place of fear? Is that place of love is for the Enneagram 8, it's trying to make an impact. It's trying to make a positive difference. So when you think about the music that you're designing or playing by yourself or with others, it's likely the combination of when it's with others, jamming with others, you're having fun, you know, you're, you know, riffing off them, they're riffing off you, but then even better if there's an audience there and they like it and it's some kind of magical thing that's happening.
Yeah.
So the Enneagram 8 is actually very interested in making a difference in the world and is very action oriented. You also have, as do I, your second highest score of the 9 types, because we have all the 9 types inside of us. I like to think of it as like we've got 9 muscles, and your Enneagram 8 muscle is maybe the strongest one, but your second strongest one is your Enneagram 7, which is a thinking type. It's external thinking, and the 7 is known as the enthusiast. So the 7 is external from the present moment, very future-oriented, because that's external thinking. And so the 7 is the best brainstormer, is the best creator. And so the 7 kind of has the vision for the amazing moments that could happen. And then your 8 being kind of your action quality wants to make that difference and make that impact. And so your 8's like, okay, so let's do this. And let's go and get shit done. Right.
Yeah.
So that combination of 8 and 7, which is also my combo, like you and I are like brothers, basically. That's a very powerful combination for creating and putting things out into the world for people that make a difference for people or that people hate or that people react to. Right.
Right. Okay. Great. All right. This is all making sense now. We're getting into it. All right. Let's return to your personal story. So discovering the Enneagram. Big impact for you. So what brought you into the world of psychedelics and self-exploration through that modality?
Yeah. Well, I, like many people that have been on your podcast, at least started experimenting with psychedelics in high school, but not in any kind of a structured way. It was like, you know, doing mushrooms, LSD, MDMA. I eventually tried ayahuasca as well. And so kind of, you know, ran the gamut. But never in a concerted way. I had some really interesting experiences. I had a lot of fun, but I don't think I ever actually, you know, integrated those experiences into any kind of, you know, change or growth really. I've been working in the corporate world really my entire career. I'm in business, I'm in marketing. And I would say that kind of my journey started, this is probably going back about 15 years ago. I had kind of a big job in the tech world. I had, so for a person who cares about control, I had like 40 people that reported to me, like a whole department. And I was doing well in my career, but I read, Simon Sinek's book, Start With Why. Like many people did when it first came out, it's one of the most downloaded, you know, TED Talks of all time. And he makes the point, you know, that discovering your personal purpose will make all the difference to your engagement at work and your ability to do your greatest work. And so at the time, I was like, man, I don't really care about selling technology to CIOs or whatever was the difference that the business was doing that I was in. So I actually spent a year and a half, I'm not joking, like doing every find your purpose, find your calling, you know, find your why exercise that I could get my hands on. I was on like page 10 of Google search results for like find your purpose exercise. And my best friend, who's, you know, very spiritual guy, he was meeting with me every couple of weeks. We'd go out for a beer and I would kind of share with him what I learned. And he would kind of act like a mirror for me and, you know, repeat back. But I couldn't figure it out. And then one day, I have a tendency, as you probably do, as I know you do, because you've got a podcast, of just talking about whatever it is that I'm into. So I'm talking, telling people at work that I'm doing all these exercises. And a bunch of people were saying, yeah, I want to figure out what my why is. I want to figure out what my purpose is. So I started a little group. And we would meet every Friday morning at 8 o'clock in the morning, 8 to 9. And I would kind of assign homework for people, exercises for them to do. And then they would come to the little class, it was maybe a dozen people, and they would kind of share what they learned about their own personal purpose. And after a couple of months, everyone had kind of gotten into the ballpark of what their why was. So we said, okay, we're going to have one final session. And so everyone just went around and shared where they were, what they were going to do about it. Like, here's kind of my calling in life, I think, and here's what I'm going to do about it. And it got to me with like 5 minutes left before 9 o'clock. And one of the people in the class, they had booked me to do a speaking engagement, a little small paid like seminar, a 3-hour seminar on like find your purpose in life that I was doing the following Tuesday. And so I kind of shared the story, shared what, you know, my why is, which is to encourage people to do their most meaningful work. And then I said, you know, next Tuesday is a big day for me. And literally the moment that I said that, this incredible wash of emotion came over me. I choked up. I'm not a crier. I'm not someone that, you know, easily, or at least in those days, had access to tears and emotions. And I was just overwhelmed by emotion. And it was because essentially what Simon Sinek talks about, your purpose, is exactly right. Your purpose is not the words that you use to describe it. Which is why it took me a year and a half to freaking figure it out. I was trying to find the right words. It's the emotion that you feel when you're doing the thing that is most meaningful. That is your highest calling. That is your highest work. And you're probably familiar with Joseph Campbell and the idea of the hero's journey.
Yeah.
Right. So what I found is that once you've won enough battles kind of in your own hero's journey, then you become the guide to other heroes going through a similar journey. And that essentially becomes your purpose in life, is to be the guide for others who have gone and gone through similar things. So anytime that you can kind of share, because, you know, that's obviously a situation that you know a lot about. So it was that moment that really kicked me off into more of an emotional journey or a personal development. Yeah. Now, here's the crazy thing. I had to leave that and then go to like some boring Six Sigma meeting or something like that right at 9 a.m. And I was like floored. I posted on Twitter, like, I've now discovered, I remember it was January 27th. I don't know what year it was. And I was just completely like taken with emotion. And 2 hours later, I get pulled out into a meeting with one of our customers. And one of the sales reps of this customer had said, can you come and talk to my customer? The guy just essentially inherited a company and he wants to talk about strategy and all of this stuff, right? So I come into this meeting and the person that I meet is the owner of the business that I've been working for now for the last 12 years. And we basically had this incredible purpose connection 2 hours after I discovered my purpose. And his business, he's like, I want you to take a look at my website. Our purpose is to connect people in meaningful work, which is basically what I had just discovered my own purpose was. So yeah. A really beautiful kind of, once you figure it out, the world is ready for you. And that's been my experience.
Yeah, but I really like that you've emphasized sort of this direct feeling experience that you had around this question. Because like in my own framework, the way that I like to sort of answer this question, what is my purpose? What I generally tell people is your purpose is to be yourself. Mm-hmm. And in order to do that, you have to know yourself, and that being yourself is definitely a felt experience. It's not, mm-hmm. okay, I've established the right idea of who I am, and now I'm going to live up to that idea or that ideal, but it's actually more, what am I feeling and how am I acting on it? And then how does that make me feel? Yeah. And that's where this term of authenticity comes in, of tapping into what is authentic for you. And I think that sometimes when people focus on the question of what is my purpose, that they approach it from too much of a mentalist standpoint of like, I want to know the thing, right? What is the thing that I'm supposed to do that is my purpose? And sometimes people even get really heavily metaphysical view on that when people start saying, okay, yeah. well, this was my karma from my past life. And so this yeah. is the thing that I need to do in this life to atone for the karma that I've accumulated so that I can advance to the next level of my personal growth and development in my ongoing educational process as this spiritually evolving thing. And it just gets so complicated. And then also people often get dissatisfied because they do something for a while and they say, oh shit, maybe that's not it. So I got to find the next thing versus what is your felt, lived, embodied reality?
Yep.
And is that energizing you to where you're like, yeah, I'm doing it. The thing that I'm doing, that this is it because I'm feeling it here. So I really love that that's what you've sort of this cathartic experience that you had around this and then discovering that.
Martin, this is the biggest learning that I have gone through or realized the hard way.
Yeah.
Which is that, so after kind of discovering my purpose, then I went and designed, courses to help friends and family. And I've helped dozens of people discover their purpose. And I have like over 200 audiobooks in my Audible, every personal development book I get my hands on, and podcasts. And I mean, I went hard down the personal development road. And it's not only purpose, which is an emotional thing, not a mental thing. It's everything is an emotional thing, not a mental thing. And whenever I've gotten that wrong, and really, I got to read a book about this. I got to try this behavior. I got to describe this. I got to think my way through becoming a better person. I make very little gains, if any gains at all. And that's ultimately what the 5MEO has kind of punched me in the face to teach me is that all of that work, and I've done a lot of it in my head, trying to be a better person, the best version of myself, has gotten me not very far. I know a lot of shit, but it's very difficult to actually change your behavior using your mind. There's a really great book on change management called Switch, and they use the analogy of people as like the elephant and the rider. Have you ever heard this one?
I'm not sure.
So the elephant is your emotions. Mm. And the rider is the little dude on top of the elephant.
Oh, okay, I get it. Yeah.
Okay, that's your mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And then the path is, if you imagine like a big, thick rainforest, and the elephant is scared and wants to run away, the path is it's a big, thick rainforest. The path is, well, there's one path where it can go through without trampling and having to run through trees, right? So that's what we are as human beings. We're big, crazy, big, massive elephants that get spooked easily. and have very basic desires, very basic hopes, and very basic fears. And this little rider at the top, this mind, he might be narrating all day long. Well, okay, he might be talking a lot and saying, elephant, do this, do that. But if the elephant is spooked, the elephant's going to fucking run no matter what the mind is saying. And the elephant will follow the path if the path looks easier than trampling through the rainforest, right? And so that's the thing that I have learned the hard way through so many attempts to give more power to my rider, to my mind, more credit to my mind than what my mind is actually capable of. We are, I believe we are primarily emotional, energetic beings that have these minds that are just making up stories, inventing meanings, narrating stuff, and then constantly, you know, filling us with negative self-talk and limiting beliefs and a bunch of bullshit, basically.
Yeah. You know, I hadn't heard that analogy before, but that's almost the exact language that I use with people in consultations and, you know, helping people integrate and talk about how the mind is always just riding on top of this vast energetic well that the heart is. And that even if we look at a bioenergetic standpoint, that the heart generates a much larger electromagnetic field than the brain. I mean, just that right there tells us something else actually is more important than this little narrator and these ideas that are riding on top of this. And I think that this is also a good explanation for why, like, for example, with 5-MeO DMT in particular, you can take someone, they say, well, this is what I want to work on, or this is what I'm looking for, these are my intentions, right? And that's the rider, right?
That's the mind
that says, this is what I want, this is what I think. And then their experience is something totally different. And we see all these energies process through people that is much more at a visceral, somatic, emotional, energetic level. And that's when people look back and they're like, whoa, I wasn't expecting that, you know, or that wasn't my intention at all. So because this is actually the more prominent part of yourself, but through the constant narration of the mind, this goes back into control, right? Where we think we are describing ourselves and our experience accurately, but actually these are just constrictions that we've introduced to create a sense of self that we can live with in some capacity.
And I've got a good example here. My very first full release, I got into an argument with my wife on the way out the door to go. She was like, you know, how come you haven't cooked the family dinner? I usually cook a big family dinner on Sundays, right? And I'd gone grocery shopping the day before, and I thought we had had, because she's a flight attendant, she was working the next day, I had thought that we had decided I wasn't going to do that. And she wasn't a big fan of me going and doing this full release. And so I'm like, on my way walking out the door, for the first time that I was going to do a full release, I had been using the M-Pen, the 5-MeO low dose vape pen for, I don't know, 6 months or something like that beforehand. But this was my very first. So we got into a big argument that was similar to the challenges that we've been having in our marriage since we had kids, which was basically like, my wife's an Enneagram 2. She's the most fantastic mother that you could possibly imagine. The Enneagram 2 is an emotional helper, very empathetic. And so she's like 150% dedicated to our kids. And the constant fight that we've, you know, had is kind of anything that I'm doing, which is taking care of some of my own needs, is in a way taking away from what I should be giving to the kids.
Yeah.
And that was the undertone. So she, the undertone of our argument is she's calling me selfish and I'm calling her, I'm saying, you're not supporting me. You don't love me. Right. And so I'm driving to my very full release. I put on some like nice meditative music and I'm literally trying to untrigger myself, but I'm triggered. And I get there and Magda, who's been on your podcast, was my facilitator. And she's just the most fantastic, intuitive, generous. And she's very, you know, I had never met her in person. I only talked to her on the phone. I get there and she's like, whoa, what is going on with you? And she starts asking me all these questions when we sit down, and she knows I'm an Enneagram 8. So she's asking me the questions that are around the deepest fears of the Enneagram and the doubts that we have about ourselves, you know, and that was triggering me further. Right. And I literally said to her, like, hey, I didn't realize this was going to be like a psychology session here. Like, can we get on with it? Like, you know, I was in this triggered place. And then I do the full release with 5-MeO. And as my ego is reassembling itself, I just get the felt learning that since we had been having kids, which at, you know, let's call it 12 years or whatever, I have been mistaking my wife's love for our kids, unconditional love for our kids, and focus and priority on everything for them as rejection of me,
mm-hmm.
which is my misunderstanding. And it's ultimately about my lack of self-love that I experienced her love for our kids as rejection of me. That yeah. I was hurting myself and her by not loving her as unconditionally as she was loving our kids, because my love for her has conditions. She has to be nice to me. She's got to support right. me. She's got to allow me to go and do 5-MeO, you know, on a Sunday afternoon. And this was not a realization in my mind, of course, as you know. This was a full-on emotionally somatic, bam, learning. You got it. This is it.
Yeah.
And I realized I had been hurting myself and her for 10 years.
Right.
And those 10 years, Martin, I fucking tried with the rider, with my mind. I tried every which way to avoid going down these vicious kind of fights that we would get into about this crux issue. And I made almost no progress with that. And I tried really, 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 really hard with my mind. Like, it's amazing. It's just simply amazing what it can do in this case to just remind you that you are a heart-centered
right.
emotional being that I've found for myself whenever I'm triggered or whenever I have some opportunity to be a better version of myself, there's some lack of self-love.
Yeah.
That's yeah. what it has always come down to for me.
Yeah. And with trying to resolve, quote unquote, resolve the issue through the mind and through this trying, really all that you're doing is you're treating both yourself and your wife and your kids and your family as props. And you're trying different rearrangements of the props.
Yes.
That, and the props are just there with the story that you're telling yourself that you're not getting the love that you want and you need, and you're externalizing it through situations and conditions and relationships, but holy fuck, it's actually just you
yes.
doing it to yourself. And yes. then you're externalizing and projecting it outward into you're not giving me what I want or what I need.
Yeah. 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 And so if you remember the Enneagram, the sexual eight thing that I sent you the other day, the operative word is called possession. So you just used, you know, we treat people as props, as things. We're very action oriented. So we get attached to certain outcomes. We get attached to people doing the things we want them to do or loving us the way we want them to love or saying yes to the crazy ideas or things that we're trying to put out into the world. And so for me, and again, this is where the Enneagram is such a great map. I know that I have this almost compulsion towards getting excited about making things happen or people doing certain things about, you know, and to the degree to which I'm attached to some outcome is the degree to which I'm not fully loving myself and just accepting what is.
Yeah.
And for an eight, the operative emotion when you're in the fear state is anger. What is anger? It's actually just disagreeing with reality. Like, this thing happened.
Yeah.
Right. Like, what is anger? It's like disagreeing with like, it happened. Right. And so the opportunity to transcend anger is to try to move towards acceptance of what is, as opposed to disagreeing right with reality. So again, like going back to the Enneagram, it's just been this shortcut. So when I'm in a pickle, when I'm triggered, I know what core fear I've got. I can put my finger on the core fear that is being lit up there, as opposed to trying to have to figure it out from fresh every time.
Yeah. So I do want to circle back around to, you mentioned the MPEN and low dose 5-MeO. And I do want to ask you the question of, well, what made you decide you wanted to go for the full release? But before we get to that, I just want to hear if we've got a little closure on this story. So then how was it after this, returning home to your wife? What was that experience?
Well, I had, like I think many people have after your very first experience, I had about 10 days of like night school, and I was in the like super love state, high vibration. I would tell people, I feel like I've drank 40 coffees, but all the time.
Yeah.
And I was barely sleeping, like night school, meditate, and I was in this really high vibration love state. It was amazing. It was the greatest 10 days of my life. And nothing happened, right? It was just pure love. And then since then, we still have the same core, you know, mismatch in a way, right? Because my wife is so dedicated to our kids. But now if she ever kind of comes at me with you're not doing enough, or you're selfish, you're taking care of your own needs, I find, not always, I'm not perfect about it, but I find that I'm able to catch myself and say, doesn't literally mean what she's saying. She's projecting her own fears or doubts or whatever and expressing them. And the best thing I can do is love her unconditionally and empathize with her and try to just react with love. And if I'm not capable of doing that, the second best thing is to hold up a mirror, to not engage in defensiveness or whatever, but to hold up a mirror so she can just kind of let it get out, right? And that I don't fuel it. So I would say, I'm sure she would say, I know she has said as well, that that 5-MeO has been a really good catalyst for the quality of our relationship and seeing each other. And it's been an amazing kind of, it's had a great effect on our relationship.
That's beautiful. And also just to comment on what you shared right there, I think it also just speaks to, in some level, just to kind of some basic gender dynamics where, you know, this is very generalized. So everybody, please forgive me that I'm just making generalizations, but at a general level, women are more likely to speak of their emotions in the moment, whereas men are more likely to speak from their ideas. And that this in and of itself is a bit of a mismatch. So if your wife comes to you and says, oh, well, you don't care about us, you're not taking care of us, the man usually thinks, oh, this is what she thinks of me. This is like her determinant of me in her mind, when actually what she's saying, this is what I'm feeling right now. And I'm telling you what I'm feeling right now.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean this is my general idea of you. This is just, I'm trying to tell you what I'm feeling right now, and I'm expressing it. And just the styles of communication can be very different.
Yeah. And something else I want to bring up, and again, I just encourage everyone to get into the Enneagram, do one of the tests, start reading about it. It's been just such an amazing kind of map and shortcut for me. But the Enneagram has this complicated kind of diagram, right? You see lines in between all of the numbers. And so there's a line between the Enneagram 8, which is what you and I are, Martin, and the Enneagram 2, which is what my wife is. And so that means there's a special relationship between these two types. Essentially, we can learn from each other to be the highest and best versions of ourselves. So exactly what you just said, I'm lower in the Enneagram 2 and in the Enneagram 4, as are you. So our empathy muscles are a lot weaker than... So When my wife is expressing emotion, what I've had to learn and to train is to actually turn on, not like you just said, my mind, which is going to be analyzed and let me fix it, but rather let me empathize. Let me try to put myself in your shoes and feel what you're feeling. That's all you want from me right now, is for me to feel what you're feeling. And it's amazing when I'm able to do that. I'm not able to do it all the time, but when I'm able to do that and put myself in that perspective, that's such a deep and amazing and beautiful connection. That's what I can learn from her, right? And then what the two can often learn from an eight is setting boundaries, giving feedback, you know, making things happen, right? The action orientation, right, that we have. So again, like knowing what your partner is, knowing what your friends are, knowing what your boss is or your colleagues can be really helpful, because how you communicate with one type could be perfect and great, but be super triggering and scary and awful for another type. I mean, there's just so many ways that we can kind of misunderstand each other.
Yeah. And I think also maybe in this kind of dynamic as well, that the approach of empathizing can be challenging, like, because sometimes the mental controlling mind wants to say, but what you're feeling actually is wrong. And I'm going to tell you why. I'm going to give you the reasons why what you're feeling is actually incorrect, which a feeling-based person is never going to respond to well, because it's like, fuck you, this is what I'm feeling right now.
Right.
And so this is what I'm feeling.
Yeah.
So then having that opportunity to have that empathy and to feel into that doesn't mean that we need to agree with it, that we still might have the mental assessment, like, well, no, this is not the proper emotion, but the reality is this is the emotion that's present. So how do I meet that? And as you say, allow yourself to be a mirror to let that come out, let that be expressed. And that often when somebody is trapped in an emotional state, and I don't mean to be too judgmental, you know, by saying the word trapped, or maybe immersed in an emotional state.
Yeah.
It's usually the allowance of the expression of that that helps them then move through it. Because as you say, it produces the sensation of, I have now been heard.
Yes.
And this person can, quote unquote, feel me.
Yes.
And that can be at least the immediate solution, maybe not the long-term solution, but it's the immediate solution to, because then there might need to be some behavioral changes that are made so that those emotion and those reactions aren't triggered. And so this gets me to a point that I just wanted to share, that obviously this was a deep learning experience for you. So in that sense, as many people reflect on their big 5-MeO experiences, they say, well, it was perfect. It wasn't what I was thinking it was going to be, or wasn't what I was expecting, but it was perfect. The whole conditions were perfect. But we can also say, if you want to preload this situation with as little conflict as possible, there's kind of this rule of thumb of, before you go do a big medicine experience like this, attend to everything that you think might need attending to, and like kind of treat it as though you're never coming back. So like in your case, it might have been, well, make dinner, in the sense that, well, I might not be back, you know, so I've made dinner, I've crossed my T's and dotted my I's, because sometimes it helps resolve any emotional residue that might be present before the event happens. And then also for minds that want to worry about things, and like, oh, I can't let go because I'm like, fuck, I didn't make dinner. Like, oh shit, I've got to get home to make dinner.
But I don't know. I mean, I only know my own experience, but I'm so thankful that I got into an argument with my wife before, and that I was still carrying that into the session.
Yeah.
Because I was able to come to this emotional realization, this incredibly powerful turning point that I had been trying to find in 10 years, right? And so I'm not sure whether if we hadn't have gotten into that fight, whether I would have still come to it, but so I mean, carrying that baggage into the 5-MeO session, it seemed to, you know, get resolved in this beautiful way, right?
Yeah.
And just before we get onto the MPEN and the microdosing of 5-MeO, which I definitely want to talk about, I just want to make a couple of other points on this emotionality, and I think it's really, really important and valuable. I'm not naturally good at this, to be honest. Understanding my emotions, I've got a low Enneagram 4, which is the internal emotional. I think you are quite low there. You're okay there.
Good.
Yeah. And that just means myself. Again, like your muscle is, you know, it's decent. You work it out some, right? But there are some people that are really good at just feeling your own feels. And so this has forced me to kind of do a bunch of practices and read a lot of books and try to figure out how to get more into my feelings. And I just want to point out two things that have been really valuable for me. One is the work of David Hawkins. You know, David Hawkins, he wrote Power Versus Force. And he wrote this really fantastic book about emotions called Letting Go. And so he has this really neat map. He's done what he calls a muscle test. So he, let's say you and I would, I would hold up my arm and you would push my arm down. And then I would experience an emotion like anger or courage or whatever. And you would, he would actually measure how the strength of your muscles are affected by the emotional state. I think it's more scientific than that, but he basically has a whole map of emotions going from the lowest vibration emotions, things like grief and apathy, moving up to the higher low emotions like anger is actually quite a higher vibration negative emotion because there's some action behind it. There's some impetus for doing stuff. And then right over the line is courage, and then getting over to the highest emotions, things like joy and acceptance and equanimity. And so like that book and reading that book, so he has basically a very simple process. When you're feeling the emotion, you actually just feel it. You just go into it. You may want to express it, but don't feel the need to have to express it. Just feel the need to experience it and allow it to play itself out. And I know that's a lot of the work that you've been, you know, been helping people through with 5-MeO, and 5-MeO can be fantastic for that. So I recommend this book because he actually details what the emotion is, how it makes you feel, and then how to identify it and how to let it go. And then the other thing that I've gotten a huge benefit out of is, I mentioned it before, is internal family systems therapy. Or IFS. And I actually use the 5-MeO M-Pen, the microdose pen, before my sessions with an IFS therapist. And what IFS has taught me is that my ego isn't one thing.
Right.
It's actually hundreds, thousands of traumatized and hurt parts, which IFS calls exiles. And then a bunch of kind of protector manager parts who get activated to prevent the exiles from getting triggered and hurt anymore. And IFS is this beautiful process where you just go into your body somatically. And this is why the meditating with the 5-MeO pen works so well, because it pushes your mind back. It kind of recedes the monkey mind and moves you into your body. And then literally like, there's an itch in my forehead. And then the therapist's like, what does the itch want to say? Like, what part of you? And all of these rich stories and experiences, especially from childhood, bubble up to the surface. And the process is simply to be with that hurt 6-year-old child and to feel, and just like me with my wife or what you were just saying, to empathize, to hear them and allow them to let go and process. And what I have found, and I think many IFS patients have found, is that these parts accumulate as pain and hurt in the body. And for me, I've had lower back issues for a long time. And a lot of the rejection that I was feeling with my wife, the mistaken rejection, is actually in my lower back stiffness. And so I've been able to kind of release and expunge those hurt parts of my ego by just going in there and listening to them and hearing them out. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Okay. So let's loop back around now to the M-Pen. So you've mentioned a couple times. Let's go ahead and explain what this is and how you were using it. And then I want to get into what pushed you to say, well, I'm going to go to Magda now and we're going to go all the way. But
right.
Let's start with the M-Pen. Yeah. So explain to us, what is the M-Pen and what are the ways in which you like to use it, particularly in conjunction with meditation?
Yeah. So 5-MeO is not illegal in Canada. It's not a scheduled substance. And so there's a website called Mindfully, which sells this M-Pen, which is essentially a 110, like 10% mixture of 5-MeO. So it's a micro or very low dose. And then it's just in a little vape pen that you can, you know, suck on. And this is essentially the greatest meditation aid that I could ever imagine. I'm kind of a failed meditator. I've meditated off and on for many years. And like a lot of people, it's boring and it doesn't feel like it's working or really doing anything, or I'm not very good at it. Right. And, with the M-Pen, you know, essentially your mind recedes and, you know, the kind of monkey mind is gone. There's some kind of an ascent that's very similar to the full release ascent, but it's not as strong, where you're somatically feeling lots of energy and you're feeling your body is kind of, you're, you know, in a way separated from your body. Your body is like a stone. And then my experience, and I meditated with it once or twice a week for about 6 months or so before doing the full release. My experience was I was able to connect with what I would call my higher self in terms of receiving messages, insights that were similar to that my big realization around kind of loving my wife, mm-hmm. That were kind of somatic, simple truths. So one, for instance, that I got numerous times was like, I'm in business, I'm in marketing. Is that my job, my role is to make invitations. Like the analogy that I received was like to a party. And so sales and marketing is just making great invitations and planning a really great party, right? And it's going to be awesome. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And like send the invitations out to everyone. But do not ask for RSVPs. Hmm. Do not care who comes or doesn't come, because that has nothing to do with you.
Right.
Be happy with whoever shows up. And if no one shows up, be happy with that. And so that, again, gets to this core challenge that I have as an Enneagram 8, which is attachment to outcomes and people right. doing things that I want them to do.
Right.
Right. And so I was immediately just getting these really rich and powerful kind of practical do this, not that. And then in many areas of my life, and I would try it, you know, different times when I was again in emotional states, like something doesn't work at work, or I get into an argument with someone, and every time I was just getting exactly kind of what I needed from it. And so I would say it accelerated my personal development and my ability to actually get into the emotional body like nothing else that I've tried or I've done. It was kind of a miracle thing for me.
Yeah. So it's interesting the way that you're talking about it here, because what it sounds like to me is that your prior practice and experience of self-investigation, meditation, awareness around your emotionality, awareness around your desires and projections, that laid the groundwork for the M-Pen to be an effective tool for you. Because sometimes when people want to start with, say, a low dose of 5-MeO, but maybe they don't have this kind of background, a lot of people tend to describe it, or at least in just the anecdotal feedback I've received from people, is that a lot of people say, well, it just kind of made me uncomfortable. But mm-hmm. you haven't mentioned that word, uncomfortable.
Yeah. And I've shared the M-Pen with lots of my friends. And I seem to be the anomaly. I use it still consistently once or twice a week and get amazing benefits to this day. I've just invented a new business a couple of weeks ago that came out of a meditation, a really cool new business to provide an AI coaching platform, which I think could work for integration coaches. That basically, like, you could have a Martin bot that we would train, we would feed the bot with all of your books and all of your podcasts. And then there's an always on 24/7, anyone can come to the Martin bot and get your advice and get your perspective on whatever they ask the bot, right? And so I'm constantly getting, we're gonna do this business. Like, I'm constantly getting all this value out of it. But if I look at other people, there's a lot of people who, like you said, they do it and they might have a rush of emotions that come up that they're not expecting.
Right.
Or their ego is like, no, anxiety, and sometimes feeling nauseous. So I think the ego kind of says, no, don't do that again. I'm going to make you feel nauseous. My guess is that it has to do with this kind of the ego not wanting to recede, the mind not wanting to recede to the background. And so I think I was, because I had tried using my mind for 10 years and it wasn't really working. I don't know. Maybe my mind was tired and ready to like take it easy. But you're right. There's a lot of people who don't have such amazing experience like I did.
Yeah. So I just have to jump on the MBOT thing. Because it's funny the way that you were describing that in a sense, that it already exists, but it's internal within people, because since there is so much of me that's available in so many different capacities, as you say, that books, interviews, podcasts, and all of that, that it's not at all uncommon for me to receive a message from somebody saying, in my meditation last night, or in my entheogenic experience, or often even in my dreams, people tell me, like, you were advising me. I was hearing your voice. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people approach it as, so what were you doing while I was receiving that? And I always tell them, like, look, that's your internalized version of me. Like, this version of Martin was not involved in that at all.
Right.
But that it actually makes me think that maybe something like that in the digital format actually would be possible.
This is it's entirely possible. So we're launching this service. It's called Coachfully AI, coachfully.ai, and basically OpenAI, who's the maker of ChatGPT, they have APIs where you can just build and train these bots relatively easily. And so I would just take your books, dump them in, all of your podcasts, dump it in, and then you tell me what you want the bot to do and not do, and how do you want, you know, kind of angry opinionated Martin or nice and gentle Martin, like how do you want the bot to kind of be, and then bam, it's done. But here's what's really neat, and this is my experience with the MPen. What I got was a somatic message of the opportunity that AI provides to unify all knowledge and make all knowledge immediately on demand accessible 24/7. The word that I got was unification. And so if you think about it, you've written a bunch of really great books, and I've read most of them in the hopes that sometime when I'm actually, you know, doing 5-MeO or talking about 5-MeO, I can remember the one thing that I read in Martin's book that's going to get me to do this instead of that.
Yeah.
And basically what AI makes possible is I don't need to read all the books. I just need to tell the AI, hey, should I do this or should I do that? And then it will give me your answer, essentially.
Right.
And that's a revolution for education, for learning, for everything, right? And so this came to me as one word and as almost like an instruction. And so like it's, and again, like that's why I think as a non-dual psychedelic that I trust the messages that I get from the MPen, because I feel like it's me and it's my high, but it's my higher self, not some bullshitty kind of my trauma, my hurt, some spirits or anything, like, you know, I've done a lot of mushrooms and there's just some weird stuff that happens.
Yeah.
And I don't trust it like I trust the 5-MeO messages. I don't know how to explain that well, but I just feel the somatic truth of them.
Yeah. Yeah. The word that I leap to there is just the word clarity.
Mm-hmm. That yes.
The clarity that comes through in a 5-MeO experience, either at a low or a high dose, you just don't find that elsewhere. And yeah. that even that quality can be very stunning for people who do have lots of prior psychedelic experience with yeah. other modalities, like with mushrooms. Yeah. As you say, mushrooms can get really freaky weird.
Yeah.
And it can get really strange. And it's kind of like, well, what the fuck was that
what
about?
Do you do like, with that? Like, yeah. what do you do with this weird, like, you know, I did some for my birthday like a month ago or so, and I had a full on alien experience, but like, yeah. How do you integrate that? What do you do with that? Right.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. And I always like to, you know, introduce the concept of, especially with like mushrooms, we're in the divine imagination. And so it's a very creative, very playful, very anything goes kind of mm-hmm. space. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we can find clarity within that, but it's actually more about the play and the exploration that arises yeah. with aliens and multiple armed and thousand eyed creatures and weird technology and all this stuff that it's just this. It's this breeding ground for creativity. And in the same way that we can look at a piece of art and we can say, wow, that's really creative and that's really beautiful. But if we get into like, well, what's the point or what's the meaning or what's the message? Then it's like this really open interpretive mm-hmm. frame that we have to mm-hmm. put on it. And so that's mushrooms, right?
Yeah.
Versus 5-MeO is just, this is it.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And lately now let's get really weird. So another kind of really valuable tool that I've experienced, and that's really kind of a current obsession of mine, is the Michael chart and the Michael teaching. So I've connected you with Shepard Hoodwin a few weeks ago, and hopefully you'll have him on your podcast. So about 2 years ago, I did a channeling session with this Shepard Hoodwin, who is a channel of these spirits. And I know you're not going to love this, Martin, but these spirits that refer to them, that are called the Michael spirits or the Michael teachings. So these spirits first came to some hippies in the 70s, literally through a Ouija board. So it's pretty out there. But I had a very close friend, shout out to Chuck, my brother from another mother, recommend that I do a reading with this Shepard Hoodwin. And what the Michael spirits provide are personality charts of your soul, your current incarnation of your soul, plus your kind of oversoul and a bunch of information about your oversoul. And apparently these are astral plane, fifth dimension spirits. And anyway, I just sent this guy, Shepard, who's amazing, my picture where he could see my eyes, my birth date, my birth location. And he sends me back this chart, which tells me my soul's role, my soul's mode, my soul's chief obstacle, how old my soul is, the male-female energy. And this thing exactly lined up with my Enneagram profile. Hmm. Exactly. Exactly. So I've got a goal in the Michael chart of dominance. The positive of dominance, the love, is leadership. The negative, the fear, is dictatorship. That's exactly the Enneagram 8. I have a chief obstacle, which is the kind of thing that makes life interesting, that keeps getting in our way, of greed. And greed is the mistaken belief that I don't already have everything that I need and that And so it's this idea of lack and attachment to expectations and outcomes, right? And there's a bunch more parallels. So I do a reading with him. And so he's channeling Michael and he's, you know, talking to me about my results and answering any question. And I have the exact same somatic truth feeling with everything that he's saying in that moment, exactly the same as that experience yeah. when I'm using the 5-MeO M-Pen. And so since then, I've been paying attention to and looking at all of these different channels. There's a really interesting show. I don't know if you've seen it. It's back from 2016. It's called Interviews with ED, Extra Dimensionals. And it's this guy interviewing these channels who are literally channeling like Pleiadians and like from other star systems and whatnot. And there's another guy that's been on the Aubrey Marcus podcast a few times. His name is Matthias DiStefano. And what I've noticed is all of these channels, and I've probably looked at about a dozen of them, they all talk about the same dimensions, the same, especially like there's 12 dimensions, but the same definition of the third dimension, which is what we're in, the fourth dimension, which is adding intentionality, and then the fifth dimension, which is basically kind of light bodies instead of dense third dimension mass bodies. Okay. And I don't, again, like they're all saying the same thing. And my hypothesis here is that 5MEO is taking us into the fourth or the fifth dimension for that brief period of time. And so I don't know. I know that you're like, you know, not as into all the different spirits and everything like that, but this has been landing with me as true for me. And again, the Michael chart has been, like the Enneagram, just an incredibly useful kind of shortcut for what we're doing here.
Well, I just have to mention, it's funny that you've brought up his name, because actually, as we're speaking here, my inbox just popped up with there's Shepherd.
Oh, nice. Well, you should have him do a channel session with you and just give you a chart. And it was a really valuable experience for me. And it, I would say overall, this I guess belief in different dimensions has taken the edge off of this one. Right. So it's hard to get too upset about any thing if you're kind of, your belief is that the third dimension is the only one that has a past, present, and future. And at the same time, we're actually, you know, playing things out in all of these other dimensions at the same time. All the mistakes and screw ups that I make in this one just don't seem so bad anymore. So it kind of takes the edge off.
Yeah. So since we were talking about microdosing with the M-Pen, I've had you on for quite a while now. I do want to get to what brought you to the full release dose, and maybe I'll release you from the conversation at that point. I feel we could probably talk for a long time. But before we get to that, why don't we go ahead and mention the Pattern Project, since we were already talking about sort of people's reactions to low-dose 5-MeO. And so tell us about what the Pattern Project is and what they're
trying to do. Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. So, you know, obviously I'm a huge proponent of the value that you can get from the M-Pen and low-dose 5-MeO for personal development. There's a few fellow Canadians that are doing a research project that they call the Pattern Project. And they're essentially looking for patterns in how people are using the low dose vape pens, what they're doing with it, what benefits they get from it. I mean, I just use it with meditation, but there's other people that are using it with breath work, that are using it with dance and motion and energy. So there are other people doing it with therapy. So there's all these different use cases. And so definitely recommend that people go and Google and look up the Pattern Project. You can participate in their surveys. You can see they're publishing studies, and they're publishing like trip reports and best practices. So yeah, definitely people should go and check out the Pattern Project. And I think you're going to have them on your podcast probably at some point.
Yeah. And I think that that's a really interesting way of kind of collecting data, of looking at these different contexts and environments in which it might be used and what kind of applications. And I think that that's obviously, that's a lot more flexible than the idea of we're tracking full release doses of 5-MeO, because there, I mean, you're not in a therapy session, you are not in a dance situation, you're not even in a meditation, man, because you're in 5-MeO. That's what you're in. Yeah. So that this has a much broader sort of friendly application in that sense, that we could bring these microdoses into all of these other environments and actually have really interesting experiences around that. And so having it collated into this data bank, I think, is quite an interesting proposition. Yeah. We could probably learn a lot from it.
Honestly, I think that they're, I mean, as you know, the full release is not for everyone. In fact, it's probably not for most people, right? But I do believe that the low dose, microdose, is quite accessible. I mean, there are some contraindications with, you know, SSRIs and things like that, but I think it's accessible for most people. It certainly makes meditation really enjoyable and fruitful. But also in combination, like I use it with my IFS therapy every week. It's fantastic. And then even for, you know, dance and yoga and motion, even just as a, what I have found for integration after a full release, you know, just using the pen once a week, it kind of gives me a touch point back to the somatic feeling experience of oneness and God and love. And I get back there and it keeps me from losing it, essentially. Yeah. Right. So yeah, I think it's great. And then also shout out for any other Canadians. We also have a Facebook group, 5-MeO DMT Canada. So anyone who's in Canada wants to kind of get together in the community, come and join our Facebook group.
Okay, great. All right. So let's get now just to the decision to go to Magda and say, okay, I'm ready for a full release dose. Because really, no matter where you're starting, that's a big leap.
Well, I'm gonna let you down here a little bit here, Martin. I had only been using the pen and I had lumped in 5-MeO with other psychedelics. And I hadn't read your book or listened to your podcast.
Oh, shame on you.
I didn't know that this was the world's most powerful psychedelic when I went and did it. I mean, she might have told me, but actually when I had my Magda's so great, you know, we had a pre-call, right? And she's just the most fantastic facilitator I could imagine. It's been so helpful to me. But she said to me, like, don't create expectations. Don't, like, you know, do a bunch, don't think a lot about it. You know, she gave me some diet and some things to do to like get into a good headspace and like go on a social media diet. But she said, don't like think about it too much.
Yeah.
So I didn't. I went in pretty cold. And I, as an Enneagram 8, maybe you're like this too. Like, someone asked me to do something that looks pretty cool, I do it. I try it. Like, I just kind of go and try things. Right. So I went in pretty ignorant, to be honest. I certainly didn't realize it was going to be kind of the most life-changing psychedelic experience. I did not realize that. I made the decision quite lightly in retrospect.
Yeah, but it worked out for you.
It did. It really did. And then a few months later, Magda had a retreat. Where it was a 2-day retreat where we did 2 full releases, but we also did breath work without anything. We did ecstatic dance and we also did meditations with the pen. So it was like 2 full days of all these different modalities. And she called the retreat 5-MeO in me, I think. And that was actually what I took from it. And so I believe, and I guess they've now have some scientific evidence of this, that 5-MeO is a chemical that our brains will make. Yes. And so I have done, you know, transformational joy breath and the Joe Dispenza kind of locking breath and gotten myself to a very similar 5-MeO experience, right? Where the ego falls away. I'm getting the kind of energetic, you know, shakes and that full love-based state you can get into with breath work and you can get into with ecstatic dance. And so coming out of that retreat, the real learning for me was like, this is a constant practice involving all of these different things. I've been starting to do cold plunge lately. I have this Shakti mat. I don't know if you ever used a Shakti mat, but there's all these different things that you can do that can get you re-engaged with your body, with your emotions, with your energy body. It's not just a full release. So that's, I think another thing that I would, you know, want to share with people is keep testing and trying all this stuff, right?
Yeah. Wow. Well, thank you so much for the great conversation today, Edwin. And if you mentioned there's the 5-MeO-DMT Canada group on Facebook, but if people wanted to reach out and get in touch with you and maybe do some Enneagram work with you or do some integration work, how would they get in touch with you and where would they find you?
Yeah. So, I mean, this is kind of all my passion projects and things like that. But by day, I work in the corporate world. I actually work in the staffing industry. So people can go to my boring LinkedIn page, Edwin Jansen, and find and connect with me. You can also, you know, find me on Facebook or come and join that 5-MeO DMT group. I am certified in the Enneagram, but I really just do it for friends and family and colleagues.
Yeah.
So that's not something that like I, do for people. If you're an integration coach or you're any kind of a coach and you're interested in this coaching bot, that's something that we're going to be building. We haven't built the website yet, but it will be at coachfully.ai. And then, yeah, the MPEN, you can just Google the MPEN. It's Mindfully is the website, mind-fully.co is the website for that. Martin, this has been a real honor for me. I mean, I've listened to hundreds of hours of your podcast, and the value that you've put out there into the world and the way that you do it, it's been instrumental in helping me to navigate the 5-MeO world. Your book especially was really, really helpful to me, because after I got my ass kicked, I was like, holy shit, what is this thing? And yeah. I need to understand what this is now, what I can do with it. And so I've just really appreciated all of your content, what you've put out into the world. And it's been really fun and an honor to come on to your podcast.
Well, thank you for sharing all of that, Edwin. And thank you for sharing all of your stories and insights and tools and all of that today. It's been a great conversation, and I'm really glad we had the opportunity to do this.
Yeah. All right. We'll see you later, Martin. And yeah, be well.
Okay.